Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Dino Tripodos. You've heard the expression, the bark is worse than the bite. Not this time around. Coyote Peterson on Whiskey Business tonight. Hi, I'm Dino Tripodos, and welcome to Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey, as we get back to our whiskey roots. After last week's podcast, we took a little vacation, a libation vacation, and had some rum. We went into new territories, new worlds.
We're explorers, Dino.
That's right. We go into dangerous territories. No, we don't. We just came back to whiskey for this one, and with a very
Lewis
special
and Clark,
guest,
Dino and Greg.
Let me tell you, what's something amusing, because our guest on the podcast, YouTube phenom, doesn't even do it justice. Coyote Peterson is with us,
right,
to talk about everything involving his career, his life, Brave Wilderness, Animal Planet, you name it. Millions upon millions of subscribers. The man is a phenom. It's. I'm trying to find a better word than phenomenal.
Yeah, you're right. A craze?
Huh?
A craze?
A craze is short lived. This has been going on for a while.
Yeah, you've been doing it for a
while. A long lived craze.
Okay, and I'm excited about talking to him here, which we will in just a moment. First of all, hello, welcome, man.
Thanks for having me on the show, guys. Yeah, I'm stoked.
I should also say that, you know, we don't pretend here on Whiskey Business. We're doing a rare afternoon podcast. So even though I said in the opening tonight on Whiskey Business,
day drinking.
Once I start drinking whiskey, it's tonight.
Never too early to start.
it's tonight. So I'm sitting on the front porch knowing that Coyote's coming on the podcast. Right. And while I'm sitting on the front porch nursing a bourbon the other night, a daddy long legs spider just crept up and went on my arm. And I screamed like a little four-year-old girl. Like, get it off of me! Get it off of me! Get it off of me! Because it was huge. I don't even know if these things bite. I don't know if they're just for show. I don't know. But I hate
long legs
spiders and snakes.
Snakes.
Just like the
snakes
song,
for
man.
Me.
I hate them. So the fact that you're on the podcast today to talk about all the stuff that you do and why you do it is going to be a great, great podcast. So you're in for a treat tonight, folks. Thank you so much. Hansberry, a little bit of business before we get started.
You got it. Real quick, I heard Daddy Longlegs can bite, but their fangs are too short.
They have fangs?
Way too small. Mm. Way too. I mean, all spiders technically have fangs or can be venomous. So, you know, there's a lot of unknown things about Daddy Longlegs, but I think you were going to be okay.
Yeah, well, it didn't bite me, not that I'm aware of. But
it's probably good that you were not a part of our pre-production planning today. Earlier in the Brave Wilderness office, we had this whole, we'll do every couple months like a breakdown of everybody's upcoming ideas. Like my team will get together to collaborate on what are we doing next. Serendipitous to this moment, we were talking about the giant bird-eating spider and creating a scarce scenario series about putting people in worst case scenarios. It's a concept we've been working on called Wildest Fears, but we're thinking about testing it out on YouTube. You, Dino, might be the guy, because we're like, we need people that are actually really afraid of spiders, but who would still come on to do this.
That's
so did you see the new Jackass
movie?
Yeah.
And the bubble that they put the heads in, and then you put the spider in the middle and get it to go back forth the other way. That was just a tarantula. So a bird-eating spider is like two times the size of that. And we're thinking maybe that's a good place to start.
Yeah, I'm in because let's be honest. Let's be honest. My days are numbered anyway.
Right. You've had a nice long career.
I've lasted way longer and lived longer than anybody expected. So why not go out with a flourish?
I'm taking this back to my team after today. I think we got our best candidate
I'm your guy. I'm going to cry.
Yeah, that will get YouTube views. Like, we need few people that are really going to be afraid of spiders.
I'm going to cry.
Yeah,
that's what whiskey business right is missing. Now. I will sob like I've never sobbed before.
That's what the people want to see.
Do the business while I pour our guest a little bit of our guest bottle, which I'll introduce here in just a moment. Go ahead, Hansberry. Oh my gosh, I'm going to die.
Whiskey Business is the podcast, not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Thank you for subscribing on your favorite podcasting app. Smash that subscribe button. If you're on Apple iTunes, go ahead, rate, review us, because when you do that, it helps spread the whiskey business love.
Yeah.
We are also on YouTube. So if you're listening to this podcast, check out our YouTube channel, Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis.
Smash that subscribe button.
We have almost as many subscribers as Coyote.
Almost.
Right. And you got to hit that notification bell. That's hugely important nowadays.
Bing!
Notifications and subscribe.
That's right.
Also want to thank the Evergreen Podcast Network, our family out of Cleveland, who has graciously brought us into their fold as well.
Your hometown, right?
Yeah. Coyotes outside from, of Cleveland originally. Yeah. Small town, but I still say Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, we can talk about that in a little bit, too, because there's all kind of fun. There's all kind of dangerous stuff going on in Cleveland.
We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Did you mention all that yet?
That's I just did.
I really don't pay attention to you when you're talking. Our guest bottle is Jefferson's Straight Rye Whiskey, finished in cognac casks. Now, when it comes to finished ryes, it gets debatable. This one is probably going to be a little sweet to the taste, a little. I don't know a whole lot about it. Just the fact that it's aged in the cognac casks should make it sweeter.
Mm-hmm. And that's do a cheers or anything? Mm.
Here's the Coyote. Yeah.
We should have had him on earlier.
Thanks for having me on the cast.
When it comes to my whiskeys, I like rye whiskeys. Actually, a little bit more than bourbons. I'm surprised we don't have more ryes on the show. That's not bad at all. That's not bad.
That's very smooth.
Hansberry, you seem to have developed the better nose.
It's got a little bite, but it's really sweet. Mm-hmm. It's really well rounded.
Mm-hmm. What are you picking up? What kind of notes are you picking up?
Sweetness.
Sweet.
GF.
I'm actually picking up a little bit of apricot, and I say that because maybe that's because I've been taking eating apricots lately for.
I can see that has everything to do with it, right?
Like citrus sweet, but it's got just a touch of bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very good.
I checked out a couple of reviews. Some people really love it. And Jefferson's has been around not that long, since like 1997.
Okay.
They've been making their whiskey. So they haven't been in the game as long as some storied distillers have been. But they made a mark.
Story begins there, though.
Yeah, they made their mark quickly in the whiskey world. They have Jefferson's Ocean. That's the one that's aged on the ocean.
And so do different companies send you bottles to showcase
on the bottles? Podcast? Very rarely do anybody send us bottles.
Man, you got to write to these guys. Be like, hey, we're going to debut your new this or that.
What's your address, Dino? Let's just tell everybody right now.
No, I don't want to do that.
If you've got a whiskey that you want them to sample, send it here.
Honestly, we could do that. You know,
self-address stamped envelope.
Yeah.
You are such a business entity now at this point. When you first started, I don't know how you built your business, but we are horrible at the business part of this, this podcast.
I think that's part of our charm.
Is it really? Yeah. That's getting kind of old.
Hey, but your setup here is amazing. I mean, this is super cool. One of the coolest I've been on for sure.
Oh, this is whether we do a podcast here or not, this room stays the same.
Yeah. What's cool about it is I feel like I'm in exactly the sort of room I'm supposed to be for this experience. Sometimes I've done podcasts where you go and it's just a table, some sound, foam on the walls, and they're like, cool, let's get right down
to it. We're not that professional.
This feels very organic.
No, we are professional in the fact that I can't do the podcast. I've said it 1,000 times without these two on the video side and the audio side. I just like to talk to people, but I can't do it without Greg and John. And downstairs, there's another bar. And out in the back, there's another bar. I don't like
so you can switch up sets very easily.
I just don't like to go very far for a bar. So my first question right out of the gate, excuse my language, but what the fuck is wrong with you?
Which aspect are we talking
about?
As far as
how this all started and getting bit.
Yeah.
I mean, that pretty much getting bit was like the best thing that ever happened to you.
You know, what's so funny about the bite sting phenomenon that launched Brave Wilderness to where we are at today is that any wildlife educator, anybody that loves animals or might work with animals is going to say the first thing you need to learn is how not to be bitten or stung by something. You are not good at your job if you're letting this happen. And strangely enough, I'm really good at interacting with animals without that happening, right? So when we discovered that the audience was really keen on, man, what is that worst case scenario? What does that look like? What does that possibly feel like? How can we vicariously, right, without feeling the pain, go through it? And when that happened, we discovered that it was just like, man, are we really going down this rabbit hole? And we tested it out with a couple of episodes. And, you know, from the business perspective, you know, we like to consider ourselves educators and conservationists in its own first bubble. But make no question about it, Brave Wilderness is an entertainment brand.
Yeah.
And my background in story producing and directing basically said, all right, well, how do we make this whole world super engaging, especially for the next generation? And when we tested a couple of bite sting ideas, and we didn't know how the audience would take it, that might just be like, dude, wrong direction.
right.
Keep
right.
sticking with just like, hey, this is a turtle. Isn't it cute? But they loved it and kept saying, we want the next one.
There's
and
enough of people looking at cute turtles. This is the hook that made it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The people love to see what the hell is going to happen, you know, and can't imagine themselves being in that situation, which you mentioned just a little bit ago. Yeah. You might put me in one of those, and now I'm intrigued. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, have you ever, especially in the beginning, I'm sure as time went on and you discovered and set up these bites, there's people on hand to, I mean, do you know, if I get bit, I'm going to need this, and if I, you know, if it does this, I got to do that. I mean, you know all that up front, right?
It's the anecdote, in a movie.
Yeah. So a lot of people, like, one of the questions I always want to know is like, do you have anti-venom on set?
Right, absolutely not.
There, in many cases, anti-venom is going to be at a medical facility kept in like a cold containment, you know, area. Like, you can't just be carrying around anti-venom, let alone you would never want to administer that to yourself, because your body can have a horrible natural allergic reaction to venoms. A lot of times it's anti-venoms that actually react with a human's body worse than the venom itself. There have been several deaths of people dying from anti-venom.
So people that have died trying to, save themselves.
Yeah, but at medical facilities, not trying to do it themselves. So for more context, a lot of the things I've been bitten or stung by, so there's bites and there's stings, two different things, which we can differentiate if you want to. But
I do, right now.
Okay, so a bite is something that is going to be skin piercing, doesn't necessarily have to be venom, right? So an alligator doesn't have a venomous bite. That's just more physical damage, and that's a bite. Snapping turtle, same thing. But something like a giant desert centipede is a bite that's also venomous. Now, a venomous bite is going to yield more venom than a sting. Right? Things that sting are stinging as a defense to allow themselves to escape possible predation. In most instances, venomous animals that bite are using that venom to take down a prey item. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So if you get bit by a venomous animal, rattlesnake, for example, like, the yield of venom that you're getting injected with is far more than like getting stung by a honeybee.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that to a certain person, a honeybee is any less dangerous than a rattlesnake. It's how your body reacts to venom.
You know, it's like, I'm allergic to bees.
You can be allergic to bees and be stung by a single bee and end up going into anaphylactic shock and dying, right? But a rattlesnake bite, let's just use the Western Diamondback rattlesnake, for example, like, that is a highly destructive bite. Like, if you were ever to be bitten by a venomous snake, it is a medical emergency. It's not, well, it really hurts. Maybe I should just see if my body can fend this off. Never going to be the case. It's going to start breaking down your skin cells, where something like a bullet ant or a honeybee or a paper wasp, those stings, your body can eventually take down that venom and essentially neutralize it. It's going to be very painful, and you could have an allergic reaction, which I just fortunately have not had yet.
You've not had any allergic reactions, but you've been in a lot of pain. You've screamed out, it hurts, it really hurts.
Yes, I've been in some extremely painful situations, and different venoms have different, you know, proteins and chemical makeup to them based on the effects that animal wants to target, right? So a lot of stings have neurotoxins in them, which will send your pain receptors into extreme overdrive versus like, all right, it's going to actually physically break down blood cells, which would be the case with a lot of venomous snakes, if they're pit vipers. But then again, we're getting into the minutiae breaking down what kinds of venoms are what. But back to your original question, no, we don't necessarily have safety people on set. My team is trained in basic first aid, but what we do always have is an epinephrine pen, right? Okay. So let's say I were stung by a tarantula hawk, which I've done before. Knowing the research we did, no one's ever died from being stung by a tarantula hawk. So the odds of me...
Tarantula hawk.
Yeah, so tarantula hawk is the largest spider wasp species in the United States. Imagine a wasp the size of your worst nightmare that stings tarantulas, paralyzes them, takes them into underground burrows, lays an egg on top of them. The egg hatches. The larva then eats the tarantula from the inside out while it's still alive, and another tarantula hawk grows.
That's grotesque.
Get the hell out of here.
So you can see why it's a pretty scary thing to get stung by. They're living nightmares. But at the same time, they're not...
I got scared while you were explaining
it's
it.
It's like a Lovecraft story.
They're not aggressive towards humans, right? Are you sure? Unless you mess with them, right? You're never going to find like a nest of tarantula hawks. They're solitary, and they target spiders. Oh, man. And they're pollinators at the end of the day. But when you hear a horror story
I just told you,
you're like, oh my gosh, this thing's crazy. And it is. It's a pretty crazy, unique, alien-looking insect. But their sting is painful, and it's used against spiders, not necessarily humans.
Yeah, I'm intrigued at this because as I've gotten older in life, I've started to try to face certain fears. It started in my 50s. I always had a fear of roller coasters, and so I went on the scariest roller coasters I could go on once, and I was done. But
yeah,
you accomplished that feat.
Had a fear of heights. I jumped out of a plane, and did the parachuting thing. This, which I am very vocal about, spiders freak me out.
Arachnophobia.
And I know it's gotta go back to something. And snakes, I know why. The snake freaks me out. When we lived in Greece, I came out of the front door of my house, and there was a huge, it had to be like, in my 9-year-old eyes at the time,
sure,
it looked like it was 100 feet long, but it was probably, I don't know what kind of snake it was.
Yeah.
It was like at least good 9 feet long. And it was in the court, and I screamed, and my old man came out with a pick shovel of some sort, and he just whacked it right in half, and then I was watching both halves kind of, still move around.
Squirming around.
It's not around. Dead. Yeah. You just snapped it.
Now there's two of them.
And I just, they scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Did you guys eat it?
Huh?
Did you guys eat
it? I don't know what he did with it, man, but I'm telling you what. From that day on, every time I turned the corner of that little house in Greece on the island, I was looking twice for snakes, man. I don't care, big, small, little. So with you, did this start? Did this fascination with animals and insects and the whole nine yards? Did it start as a child?
Yeah, I mean, I was super into animals as a kid. The first animal I ever caught was just a little American toad that lived outside of our house, one of the first houses I lived at growing up. And, the fascination of things that were not human just quickly grasped me, whether it was animals or dinosaurs. And, growing up in Ohio, there's not necessarily anything super dangerous, right? Like, we have this joke that's like, if Steve Irwin grew up with the crocodile and loving the crocodile, Coyote Peterson grew up loving common snapping turtles, which are a large, prehistoric looking turtle that's found here in Ohio. So as a kid, that was a big thing I was always chasing after.
Aren't they mean though?
They're super mean. Now, a snapping turtle's never going to go out of its way to try to bite or attack a human. But if you as a human are like, I'm going to interact with that snapping turtle and pick it up. Like, that thing's going to bite you. They've got huge claws, and they're very, very damaging bite. I mean, it's going to send you to the hospital probably if you get bitten
too.
They have a bit of an attitude, what kind of makes them so cool and fascinating is their prehistoric dragon-like design that really makes them stand out in the turtle world.
They remind me of the cranky old man of turtles.
Yeah. They're very close to
that. You kids, stop messing with me. Or if I get out, if I come after you, I swear to God. You're going to know about it. You're going to have a I don't know why he's Jewish.
But it looks like it.
But all of a sudden, your parents will have something to say. Trust me. But so it started as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, I just kind of embraced that and followed that passion for a very, very long time. Essentially, even through high school, even though in high school I wasn't spending time playing in swamps and ponds publicly with my friends, I, got more into sports and cars and girls and stuff like that. And, went to college for screenwriting, producing, and directing. And when I had gotten out of college, you know, tragically in 2006, Steve Irwin passed away. And
right.
at that time, Bear Grylls was also beginning to make his run at wildlife adventure yeah. shows. And by wildlife, I mean survival and catching and eating wildlife. And, you know, my team that I was working with at the time, we looked at the loss of Steve. Jeff Corwin at that point wasn't, who was another big animal presenter when I was younger, wasn't really making much content. Planet Earth was sort of the thing, seeing animals from a distance. And we were like, man, like we loved growing up with like this get into the environment, Indiana Jones, get your hands on it mentality. And we said, well, heck, let's try to create our own direction with that. And we did for many years developing concepts. About 5 years being told no by everybody that this was never going to work again the way that it did when Steve Irwin was alive. And we didn't take no for an answer and eventually found ourselves landing on YouTube, which catapulted it.
But there was an interest, I was kind of like you. If I'm to understand what I've read and researched, you guys were, you know, kind of like down to your last grand.
Yeah.
And you came across a certain company that said, here's what you should do.
Yeah. So the detail of that is, so my business partner, Mark Vins, and I, we had a little bit of angel investment that allowed us to create essentially what's called a sizzle reel, as you know, is like 10 minutes of like highlights of me catching turtles. And we went down to Florida and
This is what it could be, guys.
Yeah. Right. I caught a huge 10-foot alligator, and we did a scene with a rattlesnake, and, you know, sent it out to television production companies to be like, dude, we need a show on Animal Planet. And a lot of companies were like, yeah, okay, cool. We see it, you know, got behind it. And we did get close to getting a series picked up for Saturday morning television. Long story short, that didn't end up happening. And we were down to about our last $1,000, a little bit more than that. And Mark and I went out to a conference in California called Real Stream. So there's Real Screen for pitching television concepts. Real Stream was the first time they were doing this in the digital space. Because at this point, YouTube had really just become monetized a few years early. And a lot of big brands were like, whoa, okay, digital marketing and people absorbing content.
06, is that what you said?
Yeah, it was in, no, it was in 2012 that we were at Real Stream.
Gotcha.
Yeah, 2012 and then into 13, we were developing, and we had met at the time.
That's a sweet spot for all that. Yeah.
We had met at the time with a company that had been sold then to Discovery Communications. So like the mothership of everything that is Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, all of the brands that they own under that. And they said, look, we're getting ready to start a digital platform. And they wanted us to pitch a show concept. Now, the funny thing was that they didn't have any budget. So Mark and I had basically convinced them to take a meeting with us after Real Stream. And then we met with Discovery Communications again. And the digital channel they were creating was called Animalist. So Animalist was teeing up to become the Animal Planet of the digital space.
Okay.
Now, lo and behold, that never ended up kind of coming to fruition in the way they envisioned it. But that's where we got our start. And when the team there at Discovery Digital said, okay, cool, we'll give you a distribution platform, we're like, oh, this is it. I mean, because anybody in entertainment knows you can make a product, but if you don't have anywhere to distribute it, you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, I like this story because, you know, a lot of people, I'm going to be a YouTube star. Mm-hmm. And they just put up, you know, think you just put a bunch of videos on YouTube and you get lucky and you get hit. But you actually had a team working with you in a distribution company.
Yeah.
So that's,
well, to clarify, we had our own team. And this was the thing. Like, we pitched a Discovery. They're like, we love it. Like, you know, let's do 12 episodes of what was called Breaking Trail. And we're like, sweet. So what's our budget? They're like, oh, sorry, guys. We don't have any actual budget for you.
No.
We'll just put it out there. And we're like, how is this possible that you guys don't have a budget for your digital
shows?
So the same angel investors that helped us get to where we were at, I went back to them and I said, look, guys, if you give me this much more, I've got its distribution with Discovery Communications in their digital realm, but that could lead to getting a TV show. So they believed in that. And what was supposed to be 12 episodes of Breaking Trail ended up in turning into 52 pieces of content that we produced over one summer in 2014. So Brave Wilderness officially launched with Discovery Communications in September of 2014. But here's the thing. And this was probably the most important business move Mark and I ever made, is that because Discovery did not fund any of that content, they didn't own the IP. So we owned all the intellectual property rights to everything that we were creating. And at the time, Discovery was also like, oh, well, we want you guys to, in tandem, start a YouTube channel because we want you to upload the content here and then we'll filter it into Animalist. And we're like, we don't want a YouTube channel. Like, we don't make cat videos and dog videos. We were so disgruntled about the idea of making a YouTube channel, not realizing that at the time, this YouTube channel was going to be the thing where we could actually interact with the audience, actually see views, actually see likes. And it didn't take us more than a couple of months to realize, like, oh, this is not a second. Something cool's going on over here. So there you have it. In September of 2014, Brave Wilderness, which was called Breaking Trail at the time, was born through our own means, but forwarded through distribution by Discovery Communications.
It's just, you know, sometimes it's just meant to be. Everything has to line up a certain way. And
a lot, it's a lot of grinding, man. I'll tell you.
You know, a lot of hard work, but you know, they say that if you work hard, you know, oh, you're so lucky. No, not lucky. Hard work and perseverance is part of it.
A lot of people don't realize, because they look at the size of Brave Wilderness now and, you know, the success, you know, fortunately it's come out of for myself, my entire team. But when Mark and I essentially launched this in 2014, we had a couple of other friends that were working with us for like no money at the time. Like, Mark and I were not getting paid. We didn't make a single cent off of Brave Wilderness until June of 2016. So for almost 2 years, Mark and I had day jobs that we were working full time, and it was the weekends and our vacation time that we were continuing to travel and put every single fraction of a penny that we were earning from YouTube ad dollars back into the channel to try to grow it and grow it and grow it. Bigger. As much of your intellectual property as you can keep, that is the thing that's going to become the most valuable at the end of the day. Yeah.
Well, the good news is, based on that story, gentlemen, I can tell you that we own the intellectual property to Whiskey to business.
That's good.
The only
news.
Thing we're missing are the intellectuals. Let me shift gears for just a second, because you mentioned a couple things. Your education at The Ohio State University.
Yes, sir.
So you got this thing going now, Brave Wilderness, and you've made your it's your life's work right now and your reputation, but you studied what at OSU? Filmmaking.
Yeah, so when I got there, my original degree was in business, because coming in as a freshman, you just panic. You're like, I hope one day I make money, you know? Yeah. And so you're like, I'll do business. And then I realized it was tons of economics and math, and I'm stats. Just like, this is not for me.
Not for me.
And at the time, they didn't have any sort of film program at Ohio State. There were a few classes, like, broken down through different departments.
What years did you go?
2000? So I was there 2000 through 2005.
They shut down the film department.
They shut it down.
Yeah, way before I was
there.
It was
still thriving when I was there.
Yeah.
They had somewhat of a film department.
It was shut down before I got there.
We did. We messed it up.
And, you know, I was basically told, move to California. And I was like, well, that would be awesome if my family had any sort of money they could afford for me to live in California, but I can't. And they said, or you could create a personalized study program, which was this, you put together a pitch and you tell these different advisors that are willing to back you that I'm going to take this class from over here, this class from there, start designing my own stuff, and essentially teach myself with the guidance of professors in certain fields to make your own major. And that's what I did.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So your degree is in?
Screenwriting, producing, and directing. Yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
I might go back to school.
Now, there you go. Yeah. we graduated in a similar window. And yeah, it's tough because at that time, nobody knew what to do with the internet yet. Mm-hmm. And it definitely wasn't in any education, you know, in any higher ed classes and that kind of stuff.
No. Internet was not really a part of my existence in college.
Right.
You know what I mean? I didn't even have a computer till I was like a sophomore in college.
And I got the same thing too. That I'd be like, hey, I want to, because I was kind of the same thing, but audio production. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, like, I want to make records. I want to make a rock and roll record. And they'd be like, all right, go to Nashville, which, or California. That was it. I literally had one of the deans of the school say, we don't have, you know, you might look somewhere else.
I would always read American Cinematographer, looking longingly at like those schools that they had in like New York to be like, come here for a 3-month crash course and we'll teach you how to shoot on 16mm. And this, and I was like, oh man, if I could ever save up enough money to do that. And, you know, I had unbelievable fortunate series of events that happened at Ohio State when they launched their at the time sort of inter-network television called Buckeye TV. Got to be a part of the genesis of that. And at the time, strangely enough, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were launching Project Greenlight, which was a show on HBO.
I remember that.
One of the people that won, I think it was the second or third year, was a writer named Erica Beeney. She was actually a part of a project I was working on, and my friend and I filmed her entry to Project Greenlight. Very she ended cool. up winning. Project Greenlight was like the first big movie that Shia LaBeouf was in.
And that one, I remember that.
Yeah, and my friend, who's now my business partner, Mark, and I, like, we were so distraught over Erica leaving our project to go do Project Greenlight. I mean, not in a negative way. We're just like, oh my God, right.
Was that the Shaker? Was that the Shaker Heights movie?
Yeah, Battle of Shaker Heights.
Yeah.
So we then decided to mockingly create something called Buckeye Searchlight, and we started our own independent film company when I was a senior at Ohio State. Did an independent film there that was feature length when I was just, it was kind of like my senior thesis project. So between Buckeye TV and Buckeye Searchlight, I got this great education that I was able to build myself, and had phenomenal advisors at Ohio State that just believed in that vision and said, okay, you're going to pull this off.
Well, you're sitting with filmmakers. John Whitney's an awesome director. Mm-hmm. Our last film, Street Where We Live, you know, we worked our asses off on that on a very small budget.
So we
get it. Yep. So my question
small
is...
Small budget is very generous, by the way.
Yeah, small budget.
You had a budget?
Minuscule budget. we still have less followers than we did budget.
That's true.
but my question is, with all the success you're having now, do you sometimes want to go back to those roots and go back and make the film that you always wanted to make and do the project that you want to do that has absolutely nothing to do with this world that you're in now?
That's a great question.
What would it be?
Yeah, so I have a number of different like screenplay concepts, some that are already written, some that are just in treatment form, that at some point, yes, would love to be able to go back and do what that is. Have made some phenomenal connections at this point through this Brave Wilderness direction, not only when it comes to people who physically can be there on the ground helping make things, but also the business connections to potentially get things financed or even distributed. One of the biggest struggles that I think I face now as a want to be filmmaker versus a creator in the digital world is, how do you pitch somebody an idea and be really confident of spending millions of dollars and then saying, here's how we're going to make those dollars back.
Right.
And that's one thing that I'm always grinding in the back of my head to be like, man, I really want to make this movie. I know how I could do it for, you know, 5 to 10 million, which is a micro budget still in the world of independent films that are like,
there's still no guarantee. That's the problem.
Still no guarantee. But then you say, all right, well, the film festival world is not what it used to be, where it's like, man, if I could get into Sundance and get a film sold, like, boom, I'd be in my way. So I really don't know what is the best route to make that happen. I have ideas, but you know, I'm just kind of continuing to ride the Brave Wilderness train.
Everybody has a podcast now, but nobody has that magic bullet to make it to Joe Rogan status.
Exactly. There's not that many Joe Rogans anymore. But when you think about the podcast world, much like the film world, you know, there's literally millions of podcasts. But you ask any of those podcasts who puts out regular content on a regular basis. And like I said, when you go back to those, we did 52 installments in one summer. That's part of it, is the consistency. Yep. We put out consistent product. That's why when you, even though there are other entities called Whiskey Business out there, because it's not as clever as a name as we thought when we first came up with it 4 years ago, but we pop up first. We pop up first because
we've been doing it longest.
Because we've been doing it the longest, and we put out more stuff.
We're more active, I think, than a lot of
them. Way more active. And also, it's kind of funny how sometimes your success is also a curse in a way, because I'm sure if somebody's looking through this great script that you got and they go, I'm 50 pages in, you haven't gotten bit by anything.
Yeah.
What happened?
That is it's funny that you mentioned that, because that is one of the huge hurdles that, like, my management partner in California, who's got great connections, right? Like, I can get in rooms to pitch films. The problem is that the films I've written have nothing to do with who Coyote Peterson is, right? They might be ideas that fall in vain with something you could imagine a guy named Coyote Peterson would go out and write and direct, but I'm not in them. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm going out there and be like, let me make a movie about Coyote Peterson.
Yeah, these guys want to be in the Coyote Peterson business.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that is a big hurdle to overcome. Now, look, if I were to say I'm giving up Brave Wilderness tomorrow and I'm going to pivot hard going into trying to make movies, all of my friends would be like, no, you're not. No, you're not going to do that. And everybody that's a part of my company would be like, no, you're not. So, you know, the way that I look at it is, I've got a lot of ambition towards accomplishing that at some point in time. And when the opportunity is right, I think it will present itself.
Yeah, well, and you're still a relatively young man, mm-hmm. too. Oh, yeah. I don't know how old you are.
40.
40. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Plenty of time.
You know, my old joke about that, and I have psychological issues older than you.
He's not lying.
I'm not. But I can see where that would be frustrating in a sense.
But at the same time...
But you can't belittle the success.
No, at the same time, where I would love to be, you know, like Jordan Peele and the run that he has right now with
his little breakout,
Get Out and Us and Nope, like phenomenal, right? I look at him, I'm like, dude, you are the one right now who is going to become the next Shyamalan or Tarantino or whatever it might be, right? He's created a niche for himself. But I'm constantly reminding myself every single day, like, I get to wake up and do exactly what it is that I went to school to figure out how to do. Like, I write all of the voiceover scripts that go with episodes that we produce. I'm coming up with my team on the story concepts, and we are making mini movies every single week.
Right.
I'm just making them in a form that's being distributed and seen by millions and millions of eyeballs, where it's like, man, I would love to go out and make a film, but I don't know how I'm going to put people's butts in the theaters.
Sure.
You know, well, I can put their butts in behind their phone to watch on YouTube. So it's got its own reward that you certainly can't look at.
Well, that was one of
the
big
mouth.
Things when you were making the big move to Animal Planet.
Mm-hmm.
That was the big thing. Cause you said, I'm not going to Animal Planet to be stung.
Yeah.
You had a whole different vision of what you wanted to do on Animal Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the big story. Oh, I mean, in a way, it's kind of like you're talking about the pivot.
Yeah.
You kind of pivoted a little bit when going to Animal Planet.
Yeah, we did. You know, and we know that the bite and sting extreme stuff is guaranteed for views, right? And we love that the audience gravitates towards what that is. But it's a very small percentage of what Brave Wilderness's entire library truly is. It only makes up about 2%. I think we have something like 715-ish videos at this point. And I would say... less than 50 of them are bite and sting. So that might not even be 2%. I don't know what that percentage is. But we knew that in making Animal Planet that we wanted the opportunity to tell bigger narrative stories around specific animal species. And they got that. And, you know, we were very happy to have that opportunity. And there's a good chance that that would still be going had COVID not prevented us from doing international travel. I mean, Brave the Wild, which was the name of that show, literally I was on a media tour promoting it. In New York, people were like getting sick, and people was like, "Oh, we don't know what's happening." But a lot of people kept getting sick, and people were canceling meetings. So I literally just squeaked through my media tour on West and East Coast before everything shut down.
Yeah,
literally 2 weeks before it all shut down.
Did you see a bump? You know, everybody was at home streaming, and
on YouTube, we certainly did. Yeah. But what's crazy about television is that it's just. I liken it always to being a mastodon stuck in the tar, man. Like, we were just watching numbers across all television, period. Cable television just plummeting. Sink. It didn't matter what the network
and
was.
And then, so then at what point do we wrap our heads around, yes, it would be cool to make a movie, but it's not what it used to be. You know what I mean? And maybe
you'll have one on Netflix.
And there's just as many kids out there that go, I want to be the next YouTube star. They don't want
to
make
a movie. Is that a bad thing to be the next movie on Netflix? I mean, you got millions of people.
Our priorities are all out of whack. Not out of whack, but jumbled from what we grew up watching.
I think it depends what you want too as an artist, right? Like for me, we'll just use me as the example. I'm not really in this because I'm interested in getting tons of views. Certainly love the fact that people love our work and we get the views because the views equate to ad dollars, which equate to being able to provide people with jobs. But as an artist, I think for me at some point in time, being able to tell a longer narrative, completely fictionalized story is where my genesis kind of comes from. So getting to do that, I would love that opportunity, but how do you guarantee getting the eyeballs to make it a success? Because you know how many movies are made every year that nobody's ever seen?
Nobody sees. You know? And yet we still sit here and spitball ideas back and forth like, man, we got to put something on film. We got to do something. What's our next project going to be? Knowing that it could be in vain.
But digital distribution is a whole nother thing. And when you go from YouTube to Facebook to now TikTok, and we're talking hundreds of millions of billions of views, is crazy. Like, a lot of times I can't even wrap my head around that. So for us, like, a good video, anytime what we consider a good video is something that surpasses a million views, and whether it does it very quickly or takes it a couple weeks to get there, a million view video, we consider, boom, that was a good video. Things that don't get to a million views, though, even at 500,000 views, like when you really think about that, that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of
500,000 pairs of eyeballs that have landed on something that's animal oriented, which you have to keep in mind is its own very niche realm. We're not sports. We're not fashion. We're not motor cars, true crime, like animals. Everybody loves them, but they're still their very own unique niche.
Let me ask you, for every run of success, you sometimes come across a blip. And
we're used to that. Right?
And I'm going to use radio as a lead in to this question, because we always get so frustrated with what we call the half listener. The half listener who's heard half of what we said on the air or half of what was said on the podcast, and then gets inflamed because they didn't listen to the second half, which kind of explained the first half. So I got one blip for you that I want you to talk about.
And
that would be Bigfoot. Let's tell that story and settle this once and for all.
So over the history of Brave Wilderness, we've had a handful of like videos that just didn't hit, or they hit in a way that really made people angry. One of them was the time I made my own cheeseburger at Burger King. People were not happy about that.
Who do you think you are?
Well, we didn't think about it at the time, but it was promoting fast food to maybe kids wanting to eat fast food. And like, you don't think about that until a whole landslide of comments piles up and you're like, oh, well, I grew up eating a lot of Burger King and, you know, Cactus Jack, Travis Scott had his burger at the time, and then Jack Black went out and did his own thing. We're like, let's just try to start this restaurant. We're going to make this Stay Wild Burger at Burger King.
Right.
Yeah, that didn't go over real well. But the Bigfoot thing, what's funny is that we love Bigfoot, and
who doesn't,
right? Well, who doesn't?
I was just at the Bigfoot Festival down in Hocking Hills.
Okay, we actually thought about going to that, except I probably would have been murdered by being there. So for those that don't know, the Bigfoot skull debacle as of recent that turned into this hugely picked up international, like, holy cow, Coyote Peterson discovered a Bigfoot skull. Now, here's the story behind it. We had been working on this Bigfoot skull concept for many, many, many months. And the entire time we're working on it, we were like, how do we create a Bigfoot concept that doesn't mislead the audience and doesn't make people angry? Not because of the style in which we were going to do it, but because we're a wildlife channel that focuses on real animals, not cryptozoology. Now, I want to believe that Bigfoot is real just as much as anybody.
Is that the term, cryptozoology?
Cryptozoology or cryptids would be where Bigfoot falls in, right? And Bigfoot's in this gray area because it's like, well, it's not the Mothman. It's like, it's a large primate. It could be real.
It could be real.
I mean,
there's crazier shit out there that we've digested and accepted as fact.
Sure. Yeah. So we spent a lot of time.
Gigantolithicus or something.
Gigantopithecus?
That's it. Gigantolithicus.
So I'm trying to remember the words. I strangely know a lot about Bigfoot. I've been researching Bigfoot for almost 2 decades now. I read tons
Why?
Of books.
Why?
I just think it's fascinating.
Right?
Because when I was a kid, we thought we saw Bigfoot in the woods.
Okay, there it is.
It ended up being a black bear, which was pretty legit Geauga County, but it was not Bigfoot. So we started kind of unearthing, all right, what Bigfoot stuff has been done before? Like, we were like, man, maybe we do a Bigfoot episode where we put someone in a costume and talk about this is how Planet Earth would film Bigfoot. But we were like, well, why has no one ever found a skull? That would be a really interesting take, to be like, let's take elements from all of the Finding Bigfoot shows and the bad Amazon Prime documentaries that they suggest you if you watch one on Loch Ness Monster. You're like, did you know about this over here? No, somebody made this on like their VHS camera, but I'm going to watch it. So we tried to do like a tongue. I watched them all. We tried to do this tongue in cheek, like, let's make a funny Bigfoot documentary. And in the middle, put a very clear, everything moving forward is a what if scenario, which was us discovering a planted Bigfoot skull prop based off of a male silverback gorilla. Now, here's where it all went wrong, is once the episode went through post-production, and granted, we shot this whole thing in like 8 hours, like randomly hiking off into the backcountry of British Columbia. And we were like, oh, cool. Well, we really feel good about this. And you know, we filmed all the piece parts. And my one editor cut it together. We're like, wow, like, this turned out so much better than we thought it was going to.
That's the worst when you like think you're doing really something good.
We're rich.
Well, this is going to be great.
Well, not because we thought it was going to be a hit, but because when we filmed it, we were in British Columbia specifically filming white sturgeon, which is this huge prehistoric looking fish. And we were coming off of a 4-day shoot that was freezing cold. It was a bender of a shoot. You know, I'm in freezing cold water catching these huge fish. We're like, dude, we got what we came after in the can, and we knew we wanted to try to pull off this Bigfoot thing. And my whole team was like, oh, are we really going through making the whole Bigfoot video? I'm like, yes, guys, we're getting up tomorrow. It's 6 a.m. We're going for this. I was wearing like a weird like poncho. And, like, I was trying to embrace like, cool, this was like,
you
the
were
Bigfoot
committed.
Show. Dude,
you were
super
committed.
And once the episode got through post-production, my team was like, dude, I think we have two parts here. We should put a break in the episode after we find the skull. Even though at that point we had already said this is a what-if scenario, just to keep people hanging on, because a lot of times you could do what's called a boomerang effect on YouTube.
Right.
If you release one piece 1 week and then you hold the final answer, it can drum up big views between two episodes.
The tease. Right.
So that's the marketing strategy to something. But here's where it all went wrong.
I can see it coming like a train.
And this, hindsight's 20/20. You know, my team and I still talk about this. You know, you learn from your mistakes, but this was definitely one of them. So we were in South America filming a big episode on jaguars, and we had like no service anywhere that we were. And the head of my marketing department, she sends me a Teams message, and she's like, hey, were you going to make your own post about the Bigfoot stuff before it comes out? And I have very limited service in my room, and everybody's like, we're having dinner, we got to go. So I'm like, okay, I'll make a quick post. And it was a couple of screenshots from the skull from the episode. And the original post was, Bigfoot skull in British Columbia. Did we find proof? What do you believe? Question mark. I was about to hit send, which was pretty benign at that point. I was like, you know what? I'm like, this is not Blair Witch Project marketing enough. Because part of it was like, how can we like build up like this hype? Everything Bigfoot is always hype.
Sure.
And I'm like, you know what? I don't think it's strong enough. So I just went for it. I was like, let me just lay out the whole story of like, I got the skull, I smuggled it through customs.
Oh, that's what I heard.
Through TSA.
You admitted to breaking international laws and all this
stuff. Yeah, at the time, I was like, yeah, this is, people are going to, I was on Instagram. And I made the mistake of also sending it to Facebook, where everything just turns into a trailer.
Sure. Yeah,
Long story short, sent it, went off, had dinner. Wake up the next morning, and there are people writing articles. And my team is like in a panic. They're like, dude, people are freaking out. Like, this is not how this was supposed to happen.
They believe it.
We're like, how do we backtread? So there were a couple of things that were changed about the post, but we're like, well, let's let the episode come out and see how everybody likes it. And that just continued to be a landslide of the original Instagram post misleading people in a way that we never intended to, right?
That's the thing. Not the intention.
To be honest with you, with the fact that it was Bigfoot, we were kind of like, is everybody take Bigfoot literally this serious? And from a Bigfoot lover's perspective, I could be like, yeah, I get it. Like, Coyote Peterson, we trust you for everything animal-oriented, and you find a lot of skulls, and you always show us online. Like, that's kind of where the genesis for this idea came from. But in context of the video, when you're saying it's a what-if scenario, it's a lot different than building up the hype on Instagram. Right. We just didn't. I mean, everybody that we know looks at the skull. They're like, clear, it's a movie prop, dude. Like, a real skull's teeth would have been falling out. So we didn't really think people were going to take it as anything other than, oh, cool. Yeah. Sometimes you guys make goofy videos. We also did a video on Lord of the Rings where I turned into Gollum and Smeagol. Shaved my body and painted myself gray.
They didn't believe that. You know what? They're gonna buy the Bigfoot, but not the Gollum.
And to be honest, at the end of the day, the whole
Bigfoot, did you really do that?
I did do that. Yeah, we went to Hobbiton in New Zealand and shut the set down for 4 hours.
That's awesome.
Talk about that's another
that's awesome.
Committed.
Well, the thing is we thought we had a good grasp on the fact that the audience gets that sometimes we like to make these fun, goofy videos. And the audience have been asking for a Bigfoot video forever. We just didn't know the right way to do it. We thought this was it, but a lot of people were pretty upset. And people have moved on at this point.
Yeah, they have. But it still comes up. It's kind of funny. Even though you have moved on from it, people
for
still...
as many people that were out there that made the threats of wanting to rip my head off, I still have
ridiculous.
Yet to have somebody in public come up to me and be like, you ruined Bigfoot for me.
Yeah.
That's like, well, did we or do we just add another piece to the grand scheme of Bigfoot lore?
See, and
fun,
I listen to
know?
All this, and in my crazy world, in my head, I see Bigfoot back in his cave with internet, you know, on a computer, looking at the story and just laughing his ass off.
Yeah.
Like, he fucked that.
Coyote.
Coyote, that was a blunder.
Not today, Coyote, not today.
Yeah, we still laugh about it quite a bit in the office because it certainly had us in a bit of a panicked uproar. Certainly my social media department to be like, well, what do you do here? And you steer the course is what you do, you know. We released all the content originally the way we had intended to. But you know, you look back on what that is, and you're like, hey, you learn what to do differently next time.
Dude, you did your due diligence. You did everything you're supposed to do. I mean, this is just the world that we live
in. The half listener, the half viewer,
and people come to their own conclusions before they get all the facts.
Yep.
So the only reason I wanted to bring that up is so you can clarify exactly how and what it was. We're done with that portion of this conversation. Now, my next question
Can you introduce us to Bigfoot?
Does he really like beef jerky?
to be honest, this whole skull thing was to lead people off the track that we actually caught a Sasquatch, and he's now working for Brave Wilderness. He's kind of the mascot around the office.
There's going to be a half listener that's only going to hear that on Whiskey Business. Did you hear the Coyote Peterson's got a Bigfoot working on his staff? It's awesome. Oh my God! What do you think of the whiskey?
As we
take another sip, you've been very easy on it because you got other things to do this afternoon as opposed to us who have nothing.
We have no life.
But this is, I think this was very okay.
Good. It's really good.
This is actually a gift from our last guest, last week's guest, Jesse Hubbard, brought that as a gift. To the podcast.
Now, the Jeffersons, it might be a little bit more expensive in the $60 and $70
range. I've seen this range between $60 and $70 bucks a bottle.
So is that the protocol? Then I got to send a bottle forward for the next guest.
But I like it. It's not the protocol, but I mean, that's a great idea.
Immediately, in my brain, I was like, cool.
I got to send one forward.
Something from Cleveland.
Yeah.
I like it. I like the idea.
I'm on it.
Dino's address is.
Let me ask you this question, and I mean this seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, given the years of success that you had, you mentioned a couple of very influential people in this same world.
Mm-hmm.
And are you ever afraid of meeting the same fate doing something that you love?
Mm-hmm.
And are you ever afraid of dying?
I've had many close calls, and we joke about them after the fact, not to not take them seriously, but we have this running, like, how many lives does a cat have? 9, right? How many lives does a coyote have? I might be down to my last 2. Hopefully not, but believe it or not, most of my close calls have been human error, not things that are animal-oriented.
Explain that a little bit more.
To define that, it will be either me shooting B-roll and jumping and slipping and falling off of something. Or one time I was hit by a rogue tidal wave that almost killed me. So there are a lot of times things in the environment that humans make mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. Because we think we're super coordinated, but the second we let our guard down and you slip and you fall off of something, it's like, oops, that could have ended really poorly. So more times than not, it's human error that is a close call than it has been anything animal oriented, but there's been a couple of animal things specifically. Almost got chomped by a tiger shark once, came upon a mother grizzly bear and her 3 German shepherd sized cubs on the side of a river in Alaska. And this is coming like right off of The Revenant being a very popular film.
Oh, wow.
You know, the Leo DiCaprio film or the bear scene.
Yeah.
That is a very real scenario that is, I would say, 70% of the time bear attacks with grizzly specifically are mother bears just defending their cubs.
So throughout all this, what's been your most scared moment? Like we were This is how it's gonna end.
When we were developing the concept for a wildlife adventure show, we were doing a shoot down in Costa Rica during the days of building a sizzle reel for this. And my team and I were taken hostage at gunpoint on the side of a road. At the time, it was a huge miscommunication, but I was led down to a river, the Tarcalais River, which is famous for having some of the largest American crocodiles in the world, led down at gunpoint to the side of a river in complete darkness in a river that I knew was full of crocodiles. And I was almost certain my business partner, Mark, and I were going to be shot and thrown in that river. That was probably the most terrified I've ever been in a situation where you're like, dude, this was my first time traveling internationally and only to Costa Rica. And I'll tell you, Costa Rica is like the safest place in the world.
Yeah.
But if you're working with somebody, the guy we were working with at the time, I won't mention his name, said that he had certain things locked down. He did not. We ended up being on a farmer's property that we weren't supposed to be on. And some of his cows had been poached a couple weeks earlier. He saw lights down there. We had cameras. And this whole thing unraveled to where this group of guys showed up and took us. Nobody, they were all speaking Spanish.
How did it resolve?
Did you die? So
how was it saved?
Our vehicles are parked up on the road where this bridge is that overlays the Tarcalais River. And half of our crew was held hostage by 2 guys with guns. And my business partner, Mark, and I were led all the way down through the kind of jungle underbrush to the river to walk the shoreline with these guys to prove that there were no like dead cows. So they were down there looking for, because people poach cows, I guess. And I don't know what you, if poaching cows means. It's
typically do it with lights and cameras
too. It's nice. Right. They it's nice that they took the time to give you a chance to explain yourself. Yeah. We're going to take a walk and see a poached cow.
I'll tell you, when you're taking a walk with two guys with guns and you're like, this is it. And you can't really speak. And we're trying to point. We're trying to like explain to them. We were filming crocodiles. We had permits to be filming the crocodiles. We were trying to show them the footage. They just weren't having it until we go down there and I'm like, okay, here's what's going to happen. Mark's going to get shot first because he was kind of leading the way. And then there was one dude with a gun. And then there was like this big dude with a gun and me kind of behind. I was like, there was really nobody behind me. So I had my hand on like a fixed knife the entire time because I was really thinking like, man, if Mark gets shot, like I'm going to feel terrible.
You're thinking ahead.
But I'm thinking there might be the chance I could stab this guy and possibly run into the underbrush and
You gotta
worst case scenario.
Look at the room.
Not that I would have ever let my business partner get shot on the side of the river, but
dude, you know my history. I go into any situation, a bar, I read the room immediately. I'm always in tune with these things. One, two, three steps. If that guy does something, I know what I'm going to do next, and so forth and so on.
And that's where I
get it. I totally get it.
Though there's a part of me,
the cinematic part of me is like, you know, with the crocodiles and everything else, I see it being very Bond like, no, Mr. Peterson, I expect you to die.
Dude, not even kidding. There were crocodiles in there whose heads were the size of this table. We were filming with them. I mean, this is like a body goes in there, body ain't never being found. Fortunately, there were no dead cows down there because we were filming crocodiles. We came back up and there were two police officers that were supposed to be watching our vehicles. Like we had already negotiated this with the police officers on the bridge, paid the money to be there. But they decided that they were going to go get dinner while we were down there in the dark filming. Wow. So by the time Mark and I had come back up, those police officers had returned, sort of talked through the scenario. And essentially they came up and they said, get in your cars and do not come back.
Oh, you guys didn't all get together afterwards? Nope. A big mistake. Remember, 20 minutes ago, I almost killed you. I was going to stab you. I was going to feed you to the crocodiles.
Dude, we refused to give. We had passports cigars, on us. We refused chugging, to give passports like... Oh, because people take your passports in another country and then they try to hold you hostage. We ended up giving this farmer a chunk of cash to just be like, sorry for the miscommunication.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? And by a chunk of cash, probably a few $100. We were like, cool, get out of here, dude. And man, you driving back. And again, this is before there was any success with Brave Wilderness whatsoever. I'll never forget the silence in that car driving back, all of us just like, what are we doing? Like, how is this? Is this the career choice for us? Like, we literally just were almost shot and thrown in a river.
Is this how it's going to end?
Yeah. Really? It was super scary, awesome.
But
sure.
But again, it wasn't had anything to do with an animal. It was a human being.
No. That's again, yeah. Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Before we wrap things up, let me just ask you, as we move forward and you move forward, what's next? I mean, where do you want to be? You're 40 years old. That's still a relatively young man as far as I'm concerned, especially given the success that you've had leading up to 40.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and there's a certain maturity that comes with 40. I don't know if you have children. Do you have kids?
I do. Yeah, I have a daughter. She's 14. So
oh, God bless, man. God. Yeah. Good for you.
I have the whole I'm the young dad who's a known dad, which we have to balance out carefully.
Okay, all right.
Some days I'm cool. Some days I'm not cool.
So, right? Trust me, I have a daughter as well. And
you was probably 14 when you were 40, right?
What?
Probably. That's pretty
cool. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, she was, and I was, my daughter's always dug the fact that I, you know, make movies and do radio and did stand-up comedy for X amount of years, but...
I think it's different when you've got a daughter who grows up through the age of people that are, like, currently watching you. I think that's the big thing because so many people are in the YouTube realm. And when we talk mostly about YouTube when it comes to where people view Brave Wilderness, but you have to remember that also cycles in its own unique form, re-edited into stuff that's Facebook that honestly is now beginning to compete with YouTube for the type of views that we pull. And then TikTok, which we distribute into TikTok, but we don't actively go out to make TikTok
videos.
We're editing stuff to put into the TikTok space, and it's crazy how some of these videos blow up. Like, we'll have a video that doesn't do that great on YouTube, you put a clip of it on TikTok and it blossoms to 10, 15, 20 million views. And it's like, and that's what people see. And they're like, oh man, you had your head in that box of spiders, man. I'm like, yeah, that was probably me. You know,
is that your dad?
Yeah.
That's my dad. Yeah. That's my dad with his head in the box of spiders.
So where does it go from here? You know, the age thing is certainly important, right? I'm very cognizant of the fact that I'm 40, still in really great shape, very blessed to have the job that I have and get to do the dream job every right. single day. But we look at the longevity of Coyote Peterson and Brave Wilderness as something we want to continue evolving. So one thing we didn't touch on was the background inspiration for me that came through growing up with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, right? So Steven Spielberg's films literally molded me from childhood to adulthood, from Jaws to E.T., Indiana Jones, Jurassic, all of them, right? But what I learned from Steven, aside from storytelling, was how do you build a brand? Mm-hmm. How do you make a household, family, and brand friendly entity that can live forever? And unfortunately, as humans, we can't live forever. But how do you take a personality or a figure like a Coyote Peterson and say, how does this go forever? So right now we have a pretty big animated series that's in development. We hope that animated series could then at one point lead to the direction of video games, which you've had multiple conversations with people about what is the right video game look like. But of course, you've got to have that right budget. Just like with a sure. movie, if you swing at a video game without the right budget, that might be your only chance at it. So we're going the animated series first, which is a piece, but then certainly continue to create Animal Adventure content in the real-time space and keeping it relevant through all these digital distribution models is a big piece of the game.
That's genius. Mm-hmm. And is it going to stay? As you look at your 14-year-old daughter, is it going to stay? Like much like the Crocodile Hunter, his mm-hmm. his kids kind of followed his path. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're doing videos now and doing the same thing. And successfully. Does your daughter have the same interest, or does she want to be something completely different?
She's got a big interest in fashion and sneakers specifically, strangely enough.
Yeah, that's a big business.
I grew up in 90s era basketball, so right? that was a huge influence on me as well. So she loves fashion. She loves entertainment. At some point, I could definitely see her going that direction. We made the choice to... She had been in a couple of episodes early on the Brave Wilderness channel when it really started to become successful. And her mother and I were like, you know what? This is... We can't put her through those ranks of being a kid mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. known through entertainment in the digital distribution world. There's too many opportunities for people to pick that apart. So we knew that wasn't the right direction. But
So you're a good dad as well.
I try to be, you know.
I mean, despite everything that's going on in your world where you could actually cast a not so focused eye on that.
Right.
I admire that.
We like to be a brand that is definitely given the right message, especially through the digital distribution space. And you know, I won't necessarily get into like the bad directions and the rabbit holes you can go down on the internet, but we really pride ourselves in being a channel that is putting education and conservation at the forefront, but recognizing that you got to have that entertainment percentage to keep people engaged. Fighting for survival, and that survival being people's time and their eyeballs, is the name of the game every single day. That's tough.
Cool.
I think we've learned a lot, gentlemen.
Right? We've got it together.
He's
got
it together. And had a lot of fun as well, man.
Nowhere to go but up.
Well, what you were saying earlier, one of the biggest things is consistency.
Right.
Consistency. Yeah. Sadly, I wish that quality was the first thing on the docket, but it usually goes consistency, quantity, and then quality. Yeah.
Well,
and you can make it.
Yeah, well, and people say that our podcast, you know, that is quality. I mean, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. We do.
It sounds good.
It sounds good. It looks good. Yeah. And again, I toss that. The weak link in the chain is the host.
Until we get you on Brave Wilderness with this arachnophobia concept.
I was coming back with that.
Yeah.
Before we close, I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in. I'm scared to death, but I'm in.
He's going back to the office. So we have a sucker.
Well, and because of your public figure nature, this makes this so much more doable to build the buzz up even here in Columbus. So seriously, when these all shuts down, we're going to talk about facing your fear of arachnophobia with the world's largest spider. Have you seen the movie Arachnophobia with Jeff Daniels?
The
spider that they used in that for all the B-roll that was that huge queen spider.
Yeah.
That is the giant bird-eating spider.
You can do it.
You can do this, Dino. You can do this.
I'll be there.
Well, I'm committing to it on the podcast, so
you got
to
do it.
I got to.
I'm not editing this part out.
We will have to.
What do I have to do with the spider?
So we're likely going to be shooting this.
Do I have to mate with it? Do I have to mate with the spider?
No, we will not go that far, but we'll likely end up shooting it at Ohio HD. We'll shoot it at Ohio HD. We'll create a whole studio and set. And what we should do is we'll film the episode, and then soon after we should do another podcast so that you're fresh on it. And
oh,
we can
hell yeah.
Talk
yeah,
through how your that. Whole experience
that'd be
was.
Funny.
That would be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And tie the two together.
You look a little too excited.
Yeah. No, I am excited because this literally was a conversation being had by my development team this morning. And we're like, we just need the right person to do this. So
nice.
You're the guy.
Serendipity, my
That's
friend.
Right.
We've had a lot of that going on here in the last month or so.
Yeah.
A lot of serendipity in our podcast world right now. I sincerely cannot thank you enough for taking time out of what I know is a busy schedule.
Yeah.
And I also want to thank John's brother, Gil Whitney. Yep. You know Gil.
Yeah.
Gil kind of helped put these pieces together. And I never know what to expect. I always go in low with expectations, especially someone of your renown right now with everything that's going on in the world. And when I go in low and then my expectations are raised that much higher and I've had that much fun and enjoyable, it feels so good. It's like, this is what I love to do. Congratulations to you.
It's still before dinner time.
And it's still before dinner time. Yeah, man. So thank you so much. I mean that sincerely. You don't know me from Adam, but I mean what I say, and I say what I freaking mean a good bit of the time. So thank you so much, man, for being part of this.
My pleasure.
A quick little close before we the business real quick.
That's right.
Before I say my official goodbyes.
Whiskey Business is on YouTube. Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Smash
Tripodis. How hard is it to say Tripodis? It's been 5 years.
What's your name?
Tripodis. There's a T in the front of it. You put an S that doesn't exist.
Tripodis.
That's the Whiskey Business.
It is the Whiskey Business. That's part of the business.
Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis.
You work with me every day, Monday through Friday.
That's what my phone says,
station.
Tripodis, when I asked to call you.
Oh my God. Anyway, smash that subscribe button.
And the notification bell.
That's right. Notification button. And see? You never say the notification button.
I sometimes do.
Yeah, he does.
Sometimes.
Yeah, he talks about it.
Does he? I don't really listen.
Real
to
quick,
him.
Coyote, your YouTube channels and stuff where people can subscribe.
Anything at Brave Wilderness or at Coyote Peterson. If you want to go down the rabbit hole of watching Brave Wilderness episodes, just search Brave Wilderness on YouTube and endless entertainment.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you for subscribing. If you are a podcast fan, we're on pretty much every podcast.
Everywhere you get your favorite podcast, we're there. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Hit subscribe, rate,
Thanks
review.
Thanks to Evergreen Podcast Network who does that for us.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And
good or
you haven't mentioned a phone network in a while. Do you want to throw one out there?
We're on the Bigfoot Network.
That's right. And if you want to visit Dino's house, we'll put the address in the about section below.
All right. My thanks to Coyote Peterson. Thank you so much. My thanks to the son I never wanted, Greg Hansberry on the audio side. The genius of a genius, John Whitney on the video side. Our guest bottle, which we seem to have enjoyed here this afternoon. Yes, this is a rare afternoon recording. Jefferson Straight Rye Whiskey finished in cognac cask. We give it the thumbs up.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. 94
proof. Yeah.
I thought it would be finished in about an hour, actually.
Yeah, actually. Well, you know, it is the afternoon, so it's not the nighttime. All right. So, my friends, thank you so much again, everybody. Whiskey Business would not be existing without you guys, so we appreciate you tuning in. Until the next bottle, I am your host, Dino Tripodis. See ya.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.